Welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday, the actuality news show, offering unique insights and in-depth analysis featuring South Africa's top business leaders, newsmakers, and analysts for today's professionals. Your host, Jeremy Mads.
Hello and welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday. I'm Jeremy Mags with 30 minutes on South African and global news. We are live and then up as a podcast. Interviews with key business and political figures, prominent newsmakers and leading experts, all in a concise and informative update. It's Friday, the 12th of July. Coming up on the program, the massive cybercrime revelation at the Department of Public Works. What happens now? Johannesburg's turnaround on the electricity surcharge fee, problems with online school registration in Gauteng, and the Boks' long-term game plan ahead of the next World Cup. But first, Ireland tomorrow. The new Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure, Dean McPherson, has revealed a staggering cybercrime resulting in an amount of at least 300 million rand being stolen in the past 10 years. However, this could be even more as investigations continue. I'm joined now by Lennox Mabaso, who speaks for the department. And firstly, how was this crime uncovered?
Okay, let me first indicate that the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure, Minister Dean McPherson, has decided to take our nation into confidence with regards to this shocking cyber crime incident that has happened in the department, where in terms of the analysis over the period of 10 years, a staggering amount of 300 million has been swindled from the departmental coffers. But let me explain how this whole thing came to light. You will recall that the deputy minister now, Minister Sitlhezi Galala, who was minister then, was appointed in 2023. Early this year in May, so he's been in the department for a period of a year. Early in May, he issued a statement where he said he had invited the Hawks, SSA, the CETA, the State Information Technology Agency, and the SAPS to investigate an incident of crime which seems to have affected the department, a cyber crime which affected the department. We were alerted to this incident in May by the South African Reserve Bank as well as the Absa Bank. So the investigation was then launched. At that time, it was believed that the amount was 24 million. So Minister Zikalala then ordered the investigation and invited these agencies. And then fast forward to 2 weeks ago, when Minister McPherson came in, as they were getting briefing with his deputy minister now, who was Minister Zikalala, getting briefing from the department, when they drilled down into details and dig deeper into this incident, it was then discovered that no, the 24 million is actually not the true reflection. The true reflection is 300 million over 10 years, because the department has become a soft target and the playground over many, many years, and that this has been undetected. So that's how this whole thing developed, and the Minister McPherson said we must take the nation into confidence, and they urged all these law enforcement agencies that are investigating to speed up and to dig deeper, no longer to investigate what Minister Zikalala had ordered when he got wind of this issue.
Right. Let me ask you this question. What are the immediate implications of this revelation for the department?
Well, the immediate revelation is that, a lot of money has been taken away by these cyber looters, scammers. And this is money, as Minister McPherson is indicating, earmarked for development. We are a department responsible for infrastructure, and this money should be utilized to build infrastructure, to develop our country. You know, infrastructure is a flywheel of the economy. That's where we are going to get jobs. That's where we are going to grow the country. That's where we are going to create and build a better South Africa. So the implication is that the money that would have assisted in the acceleration of certain services has been swindled and has been taken away by these scammers who have looted our coffers using a very sophisticated means in terms of crime, doing it digitally. And hence, the minister has ordered this type of investigation to say, let us trace and follow the money. Let us establish how it happened. let us also conduct investigation even internally so that we can clear that there was no internal hand into it. And also, if there was, there should be action.
You talk about the department being a soft target. So I'm assuming then that specific vulnerabilities have now been identified within your systems and that you are taking measures to enhance financial controls within the department itself.
Yes, part of the investigation of this grand theft that has been unearthed in the department, as Minister has indicated, is that they will have to establish what happened, our systems, how tight our systems are, how vulnerable our systems are, what is the modus operandi that make us a playground for cyber criminals for a very long period of time, with massive theft of millions of taxpayers' money being stolen like this. So this scam seems to have grown over the years, and indeed in the ministry prosecution and conviction. So at this point in time, part of the work that is being done is to ensure that our systems are strengthened, they are able to put a stop into this, and that we are able to ensure that we beef them up. That's why there's an involvement of cyber experts in this technology field, people with the knowledge in these new types of crimes that are cyber related.
How could this go on for such a long time undetected?
Well, that's what the investigation will establish. But I for one, have been here just for a year. So is Deputy Minister Zikalala, who has been here for 1 year. Minister Dean McPherson has also been here just for over a week. So the investigation will establish how did it happen, why did it go for so long without being detected, and what is the modus operandi, and who should be held responsible, how are our systems. Mm. So it's a very comprehensive investigation involving multidisciplinary agencies that will establish all those facts. And then once the investigation is complete, as Minister McPherson has indicated, we will be able to crack down and trace on the syndicates and those who are in cahoots with them internally or externally.
Well, that is absolutely critical, those people in cahoots, the potential collusion between department officials and the cyber criminals involved in this theft has to be dealt with urgently.
Even that, as the minister indicated, the whole investigation must establish all those facts so that even if there is collusion internally or externally. At this point in time, we want to be upfront that there's no evidence of collusion. We will wait the full report of the investigation to be given to the minister once it's completed. But at this point in time, as a precautionary measure and to ensure a smooth investigation, some officials have been put on precautionary suspension, particularly those that deals with systems within the department. And 30 laptops have been seized for further examination by the investigative teams. And indeed, the minister has committed himself to work very hard to ensure the reinforcement of our systems so that cybersecurity systems are strong and are strengthened so that similar incidents are prevented in the future.
All right. Lennox Mabaso speaks for the Public Works and Infrastructure Ministry. Thank you very much for talking to me today.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
The City of Johannesburg's executive has backtracked over the implementation of a new monthly 200 Rand prepaid meter fixed electricity surcharge. Last week, you'll remember, the Mayor, Kabelo Gwamanda, said the decision had been taken. Now the MMC for Finance, Dada Morero, says it will be reviewed. He joins me on the program now. And firstly, then, why has the city decided to review this?
Let me just indicate that based on the outcry that would have been raised by some in the communities and some in the political parties represented in council, we then came to a conclusion in the council meeting held on Tuesday that we will then take the matter back to the executive and open up a review process to look into the difficulties that people are faced with on this matter. But I think I must hasten also to say that the availability charge, or what we call the fixed costs, will continue. We need to have this money. We need these fixed costs. So generally, we are saying, in light of what has been raised, we'll then have to relook as to whether is it the 200 too high. We may want to relook at it. So that's the process we are going to undertake as the executive with the administration, that we have already given them the task to conduct a proper research and a proper report and bring the report back to the mayoral committee for us to make a call. final call on this matter. But it is also important to note that it will be done within the processes of the National Treasury, who assessed our budget and approved our budget. We have to ensure it's within the FMMA so that we don't compromise any legislation in the process of the reviewal of the availability charge.
MMC, did the city anticipate this outcry, and do you think with sober reflection the amount of 200 rand was an overreach?
Look, from where we are, we didn't expect the outcry. As you'd know, that the matter also went through the necessary public consultations, and perhaps the public may not have commented quite sharply during the period of consultations when we took the tariffs to communities. So it could have been an oversight on communities. But we must also hasten to say that those that are on the indigent or are poor and unable to afford are exempted as a result of them having registered on our ESP, and those are actually exempted from the payment of the fixed cost. It must also be noted that conventional customers are already paying the fixed cost, which is much higher than the prepaid. So it is also important to note that there must be a balancing act so that we can continue to sustain the cross-subsidization of our customers. So it is important that whilst we are trying to review this thing, we have to bear in mind that we need the money to ensure that there's continuous maintenance and upgrade of existing infrastructure, and of course the new infrastructure that we intend to install. So those are some of the things that we are going to look at, and we finally arrived at the decision that we think will be accommodative. And I think the other point that the customers and consumers should know is that Johannesburg remains the cheapest in terms of fixed costs or availability costs, as you'd know that other municipalities and metros are already beyond 200 rands. There are some already at 300, 345, and so on and so on. So we remain cheaper because we did take into consideration the difficulties that our customers are experiencing as a result of the economic challenges and generally the cost of energy or electricity. So we're very, very conservative in our numbers, and hence we came at 200.
MMC, could you explain to me then how this review process is going to work and what criteria you're going to consider?
Now, in the main, is to relook at the prepaid model, look at what has already been approved by NERSA, what has been approved in terms of tariffs by NERSA. We'll then relook at the customer base on our prepaid against our conventional customers for us to arrive at an equitable decision that we think it will give a reasonable fixed cost that we think our customers will be able to afford. So we'll have to balance also conventional customers because they are also already paying much higher fixed costs than the prepaid. And we'll also relook at how to expand our ESP program to ensure that as many people who are not affording can be registered with our ESP so that they can reap the benefits and be exempted. So we'll be looking at a number of factors, including what the FMMA requires us to do in terms of passing a budget. As you know, the law only says we can pass the budget once and the tariffs once in a particular year, and we've already passed the tariffs and the budgets. So we'll look into those things and then come up with proposals that we think will be fair to our customers moving forward.
The bigger problem, of course, is the city having to address ongoing financial inefficiencies and inadequate debt collection. You've got to start getting that right as well.
Well, we have also said we need to focus on ensuring that our revenue collection is increased from the current 86-87% to 90%, which is the work that we're trying to do to ensure that we are efficient in as far as our collection is concerned. We do know that last year in particular, we really battled. And part of the observations was that most of our customers were even coming out to register into our ESP, indicating that your suburban customers who have been consistent in paying their rates and taxes are now also falling into ESP, or rather becoming indigent. And this is as a result of the economic conditions, which we also had to understand that some of these customers are stretched. So we are going to be focusing much further in trying to push it to 90% so that the financial position of the city can be acceptable. We know that our budget was currently passed at an 86% collection rate assumptions, and we wanted to keep it there. But that does not mean our performance in between cannot be increased to 90%. So we are working hard day in and out to increase our collection. There are challenges at times which relates to bridging by customers, whether water and electricity, which then results in a huge technical or non-revenue water or losses that we're experiencing as a result of breaching and illegal connections, which has actually pushed our non-revenue water and electricity quite high. And we hope that we need to address some of these infrastructure challenges and generally the discipline of our customers and get them to stop breaching our meters, which results in us not being able to collect the revenue that we should be collecting.
All right. I am going to leave it there with my thanks. That's Johannesburg's MMC for Finance, Dada Morero.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Gauteng Department of Education has announced that applications for online admission for pupils enrolling in Grade 1 and 8 in 2025 are now open. You'll know the system has not been without its problems in the past. Former Gauteng Education MEC Professor Mary Metcalf, now with the University of Johannesburg School of Public Management, Governance and Public Policy, joins us now. And firstly, Professor, how do you see this? What's your broad assessment of the situation?
You know, I can talk about the advantages, I can talk about the disadvantages, but the challenges that I think we face are less to do with the advantages and disadvantages and functioning of the system. They're more to do with contextual stuff. So if I talk about advantages, the advantages are, firstly, that parents who want to get admission for their child in grade one, and obviously it will soon be grade R because that will be compulsory, means that you have to find a school. Once your child's in a school, there's no more application for admission. But finding a primary school, finding a secondary school, means that you would need to go from school to school depending on the demographics of the area and the availability of schools and the choices you have. So it's a single application, and that's clearly an advantage. The disadvantage has mostly to do with the expectations of it that are created by being able to apply online for any school that you would like. Now, we have perceptions of school quality, which may or may not be accurate, but certainly parents will want to get their child into what they think are those schools which will give them the best education. And that means that you start moving away from the old concept of feeder areas. My personal view is I like children to go to school in the community in which they live. I think that we should be striving to have schools of high education quality everywhere, so that there isn't a sense that you've got to invest in travel and getting up early and getting into schools. But the consequence of online admission is that the schools that are perceived as high quality get very full and people are very disappointed.
So fundamentally then, the way in which this is going to be resolved equitably is improving township schools, because parents are opting for schools in the suburbs which are perceived as better. So it's a question of both sort of reality and optics, I guess.
It's both optics and reality, and it's also because of the changing demographics. I remember, and I'll use the example of the area in the Vaal. There was a huge instability because a school wasn't taking English-speaking learners, and in fact, it was a middle-class, working-class area where lots of African families whose first language was not Afrikaans had moved into that area, aspiring amongst their aspirations for their child to go to a better school. But in fact, there was no English-speaking school in that area. So people had dragged themselves up through the efforts of family to increase their standard of living, and then there was not availability of schools. And I think in many areas, we've got such a change in demographics of people who are moving into what were previously white areas, and that puts enormous pressure on the schools in the area. So there's changing demographics, changing expectations. Parents who prepared to spend this huge amount of money in transporting their children across geographies. But I agree with you. We have to improve all of our schools so that all parents feel their children are getting a fair chance.
Professor Metcalf, it's changing demographics, but I would also suggest to you that it is growing demographics. So the increasing number of pupils seeking admission is also as a result of the availability of the number of schools, and we know that there is a lag in terms of new construction.
It's even more complicated in Gauteng, Jeremy, because Gauteng is experiencing and has been since 1994 huge influx. If you look at any of the data in terms of the growth in population, a lot of that influx is people from more marginalized areas believing that they may have a better chance in Gauteng, and you have a huge expansion of informal settlements and a constant battle by the GDE to keep up with what are unplanned and often unpredictable areas needing new schools and our constitutional duty. Now, the consequence, the constitutional duty to provide education, the consequence is all the way from 94, the building of those schools has taken priority. And I don't know how well all of your listeners know Gauteng, but it's fascinating to see the growth of formal settlement, formal housing developments, let's not say settlements, in the northwest of Johannesburg, which is the sort of southwest of Pretoria. That area has grown unbelievably. Now, in that whole set of new homes, new estates, new townhouses, there has not been building of schools because the informal settlements are correctly prioritized. So if you're living in that part of Gauteng, you have very little option other than to send your child to a private school.
I'm going to leave it there, Professor Metcalf, and thank you very much indeed, as always, for the analysis. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Well, for tomorrow's big test match, South African rugby coach Rassie Erasmus has named the same match day 23 for the second test against Ireland in Durban, and that makes it the most experienced Springbok selection ever chosen. Kanyiso Chwaku is the sports journalist at News 24 and joins me on the program now. So how significant is this squad that has been put together, and what impact is it going to have on the match?
Look, it's very clear that Rassie wants to win the test match and the series. And that experimentation will happen in particular matches. There's Portugal next week in Bloemfontein. There was the Wales test earlier in June where experiment. But it was very clear that with the Ireland series, the best teams will be picked. The best teams will be picked with the view of winning the series, especially now that they've won the first test. There was a building idea that maybe Erasmus could experiment. Nope, the idea was that pick the best team, get the series one out of the way, and there will be opportunities to experiment. And I suspect that experimentation will take place next week in Bloem.
How significant do you think this is, and what impact is it going to have on the match, though?
Look, I mean, remember that the Springboks are still embarking on a new attacking game, which was perfect and imperfect at Loftus Festival. You can see that it was still a work in progress for the players. But once it starts to come off, it's going to look quite exciting. So I'm the players having the saddle. In terms of adapting to what Tony Brown is actually explaining to them on the training field, and the better it comes off of the game, the better. Because remember that after next week's test, they'll have a bit of a breakdown in early August. They've got the significant matter of the Rugby Championship. And remember that they're starting travel to Australia, where they've got two test matches in Brisbane and Perth. So it becomes very important that over the next 2 weeks, starting Saturday and continuing next week, they need to just iron whatever creases that they have with their attacking game. Because I think from a defensive perspective, not much has changed from the system that Jacques Ngaba used into what Jerry Flannery is using at the moment. So I think it's just a case of getting through the test match, or the next Saturday test match, and then ironing whatever creases that remain next week.
Kicking is always important in a test match, and Andre Pollard didn't have a particularly good performance in the first test. Do you think it's right to retain him at fly half?
No, it is. It's a rare off day. I mean, Pollard has had off days in other test matches that have been costly. I'm reminded of Adelaide in 2022, where he had quite an off day with the boot, and it actually impacted the scoreboard later in the game. But I think in this case, South Africa did have other points in the bag that allowed for these points not to have such an impact on the game. But again, when you look at matches like Ireland, the scoring opportunities come in, penalties are coming, tries, and you have to take them wherever they come. And I think it's going to be very important that Pollard actually finds kicking, because one, also, kicking at sea level is going to be quite of a different challenge as compared to I felt. I know that the weather in Durban has been a bit more fairer as compared to what the miserable stuff we've seen down the coast in the Eastern Cape and the Western Cape. But I think what becomes more important now is that whenever the scoring opportunities come for the box, even if for penalties, Pollard is there to make sure that they're taken.
When it comes to scoring opportunities, there's no doubt that the center pairing, Damian Dialenda and Jesse Creel, is critical. If I'm not mistaken, now the all-time most used Springbok center pairing. This is a combination that works very, very well and will be critical come Saturday.
Indeed, they plan the lining up together for the 30th time. And making them the most experienced midfield combination. They're quite critical to the evolution of this group, because one of the things that Tony Brown has said is that Damian Dialenda is one of the best passers in the Springbok group. And if one watches the first test very carefully, you'll see that he's become very important in the evolution of this particular game model. Creel is important in that, as much as he may not have Lukanyo arms, rugby abilities in terms of actually being a gifted player, he's been very crucial that once he hits gaps, he is quite a strong finisher. And I think he's been trying very hard in the soft skills in terms of passing, in terms of putting people in his gaps. But again, when you look at matches like the one against Ireland on Saturday, the importance of actually having settled combinations with continuity is very important.
Test match rugby is all about tactics and strategy, and there was some criticism after the first test about the replacement of six forwards, saying that it was prejudicial against the back line. What do you make of that criticism?
Well, it's off for the mark, because teams use the 6-2 split now. The box they're using in the 2019 World Cup, I mean, France, for example, are big users of the 6-2 split. England are using the 6-2 split. New Zealand even often have used the 6-2 split. Ireland used 6-2 split during the Six Nations in two matches. So I guess each to their own. It works for South Africa. I mean, South Africa will even often venture towards the 5-1. I suspect they may go 5-7-1. They may go 5-3 next week. But remember that the key part, World Rugby's regulations are very clear, and that on the bench, you must have three front row forwards. You see where you can actually mix and match your replacements. So again, it may come across as prejudicial to backline players, but the key part remains that the box have placed a very big versatility in the backs, number one. And then number two, they want a fresh pack on the field for basically the entire game. If you look at what they did, the game they introduced to the six, and that came off right at the end of the game where Ireland's pack was clearly flagging at altitude. So teams need to do what they need to do to win. And Rassie Erasmus have identified that having a fresh pack on the field for 8 minutes is a key ingredient in them actually finding a way to win.
Are there potential weaknesses in the Springbok side that Ireland might look to exploit?
I think this is the defense pattern. It would be now Jerry Flannery's third game looking after the defense. And I think one of the key things that have transpired with the box, especially at the start of a new coach's tenure, When you look back when in the Alistair era, you look back at when Tshaw Kinaba and Rassie Erasmus started. The defense generally the one pattern that comes together later because, I mean, there needs to be a very good understanding in between players. What they've done, well, I think what the continuity has done is that you've had a group of players who play together for a long time and don't, and actually are now able to groove well in terms of defense pattern. I think where Ireland did quite expose the box a bit. It was still a defense pattern. But again, I suspect that the box will have wised up to how Ireland will try to unlock the defensive system.
And there's no doubt if you look at Rassie Erasmus, all of this is a long, long-term game strategy ahead of building and refining and tweaking ahead of the next Rugby World Cup.
Indeed, he made it clear that one of the reasons why he gave the bench 30 minutes is to make sure that the guys get time on the bench. He realized that guys like Ia, Salman Morat, and AFK's name, and Mark Kopenstad, and Gerard Steenkamp won't get enough starting opportunities. I mean, Mungimbo Nambi and Malcolm Ox will rotate as the season progresses, but it's become clear that he needs to build depth because also remember that the box do have a core of players who are 33 and above, who may be a bit long in the tooth come the 2027 World Cup, so then the need to blood depth becomes very important. So what they want Rice is doing is that even when there are pressure games, then he is giving players playing opportunities. Again, he gives the bench at least 20, a minimum 20, a maximum 25, 28 minutes tomorrow to ensure that by the time he needs those particular players to start, they'll be ready and running for starting in test matches.
Thank you so much for your time. Kanyiso Chwaku is a sports journalist and, as you can see, a rugby enthusiast at News 24. I do appreciate your time this Friday. And that is our program for today. MoneyWeb at Midday is live at noon weekdays. We are then up as a podcast. Thank you for listening and goodbye.
Listen to the daily live stream of MoneyWeb at Midday or download episodes on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.